God.
God. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, the Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you.
Hey, Benjamin.
Glad you're here. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are on step three. And please welcome our panel this evening. We have Casey and Kyle. I will read the first section that starts with page 60, and of course step three itself. And then each member of our panel will share a little bit on the reading, and then I'll move on to the next one. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Section one, page 60. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas: that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and that God could and would if he were sought. All right, which of you would like to go first? Kyle?
I'm going first.
You're up.
Kyle, alcoholic.
Hey, Kyle. Hey, Kyle.
First of all, thank you guys for asking me to speak. And yeah, just really happy to be here. My home group's Last Call, Young and Sober. Come check us out. 99 East Mercury Boulevard, Friday nights up in Hampton, 8:30. Or it's going to be 8 p.m. starting in April. Very exciting. And I have a sponsor. I have the pleasure of being a sponsor. That's very important to me, and especially in regards to this step as well. This little part here, I think, gets overlooked because it's a setup. A lot of this is the foundation of the book, and it's also a quick reminder that I need to make sure that I've read the personal adventures in the back of the book, that this is part of the foundation of it, that I know that as an alcoholic, there's other alcoholics that slipped and messed up just like me and found some kind of program that has done something different. And it just hammers home very simply, like, this is the stuff that we need before we can move forward. And that's the frustrating part about this book, is that it's so frustratingly simple. I like to overthink way too many things. And the fact that it just says, I'm an alcoholic and I cannot manage my own life, and there's no contingency in regards to what manage actually means, that that probably no human power could have relieved their alcoholism. It leaves me a little bit of being a scapegoat of with that word probably, but yeah, I need to buy into that, right? And then that God could and would if he were sought. And that leaves me at the end of step two, and there's nothing else left but what's coming. So that's what this little part reminds me of. Thanks, let me share.
Thanks, Kyle.
Hey, everybody. My name's Casey. I'm an alcoholic and addict. Thank you for the opportunity to be of service. I love this group. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. My home group closed recently, so I'm in search of a new home group. I love staying active in this program. It's due to the simple steps, simple actions that are listed in this book that I even have a life today. So make clear three pertinent ideas. So pretty important, huh? That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. And I was like, I'm managing just fine. Thank you. I had a lot of fight when I came here. I had so much fight. I had so many excuses. I was managing a lot of things. None of them were very legal, but I was managing a lot. And life was just unbearable. Many times I didn't have power because, you know, I would drink my money or do other things with my money. And it was just like this constant hustle. And I was managing everything. I was managing ASAP. I was managing the courts. I was managing my parents. I was managing my child. I was managing the bootleggers, which were coming to the end of their business arrangement with me. Should I say, I was just, I like alcohol. I grew up in Ocean View before it was a beautiful place to live. It wasn't exactly a beautiful place to live when I started to get sober, and there were lots of resources in that neighborhood. And I just found myself on a very seedy side of alcoholism and drug addiction, but I was managing. And when I came here, no one could have told me that I wasn't. But the part that I missed was that I didn't have a life, right? Managing our own lives, right? So I was managing a lot of things, but I didn't actually have a life. And that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. I wasn't 100% sure when I first walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard this, that I couldn't relieve my alcoholism. But that God could and would if he were sought. And so when I came here, those three pertinent ideas, I had to stick around a little while to really succeed to those to those ideas. When I read them, I immediately had comeback. And I came in with a prejudice against everyone and everything, but particularly God. I grew up in a religious household, and he could not possibly be the answer. Because if he'd have done anything I requested in the last 9 months, I probably would still have my driver's license and not be wanted. So he's not of much value in here now, is kind of the way that the first time that I read these, that I perceived them. So, but the no human power, though, has really stuck out to me. Because one thing that I could absolutely say without a shadow of a doubt, and it took me a while to figure it out, I didn't like pick up one white chip and stay sober, but is that like I was powerless over alcohol. Right. And so when I really succeeded to myself that I was not going to be able to control my drinking, the understanding that that no human power was going to be able to take that from me just ever so slightly kind of broadened my idea of something bigger than alcohol. Right. I was nowhere near being able to say God or a higher power, but definitively something bigger than alcohol was going to have to solve this problem, because left on my own devices, I always drank and I always used. And that was kind of like the first real truth that I told myself in this program. So that was my first experience with pertinent ideas.
Thank you both. Next section, also on page 60, being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? First requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something, somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. Kyle?
Yeah, this when I first was taken through a step three, you know, we went through some of these parts, but I wasn't taken through the big book from beginning to end, first 164 pages. But my sponsor at the time had made it clear. He's like, understand you're not running the show anymore. And if you fully believe in something that can actually take care of your life, it's probably best to let them do it. And this is on a backdrop of like, I was the one that would show up hungover to church to try and help work with the kids. So like, that's where my drinking kind of took me. And when my sponsor asked me, hey, do you have a higher power? I was like, yeah. He said, great. How's that working for you? And I couldn't lie to him. I'm like, it's not. And so that perception of God, I lost completely. So I was completely vulnerable. And so now it's like, now I've got to make a decision to turn my will. And I have no idea how to do that. And fortunately, Bill was an alcoholic like me. And he's like, what do we do? And I'm like, great. What do I do? And that first requirement that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Hard pill to swallow, because like that's all I know. And I love this line, even though our motives are good. I'm not a big fan of motives, because I hear it as like a bumper sticker, like, what's my motive? What are my motives with it? I don't get motives back at this point in time. Like, it talks about it later in the book, but I'm not big on emotives anyway. And Bill actually goes in and describes this as he does with everything, like 2-3 times, like explains it one way and explains it 2-3 other ways down the line. It wasn't until 8 months ago that my sponsor was like, hey, check out this podcast. This guy actually goes into step three and talks about this part where it just says most people try to live by self-propulsion. So it's not talking about alcoholics or just alcoholics, most people. I hadn't heard that line at the time, 11 years, almost 12 years of my sobriety. And I was like, holy crap, I've been reading this book and I missed out on this part that this is including everybody. Most people live by self-propulsion. Most people have an issue with motives, that there can be good motives and bad motives. But despite that, when it's all of my ideas and my plans and my thinking, it still comes off weird. I remember so many times in my drinking where I would want to be gracious, but then still expect stuff in return, where I'd want to be forgiving, but then I'd expect you to forgive me. And for some reason, I thought, if I get sober, I won't have to deal with this. And like, that's just not the case. And and then it's like, on the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. And man, it talks about it earlier in the book, but I had so many philosophical ideas of how the show is supposed to be run, right? My opinion of how life is supposed to go ruled everything. And as an alcoholic and Alcoholics Anonymous, I still do that in so many things, in my relationships, finance, and my romance. And it's evident. And so this life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Like, I really have to buy into that to be able to get this first part of this step. That's what I got.
So what was it? I didn't have to go very far when I first got here to realize my life wasn't incredibly successful. So I had a lot of fight towards everything that I was reading here. But at the same aspect, I think I was just fighting to fight. Not because there weren't so many truths. And I have to tell you, I, like Kyle, like so much of this book applies to me years into sobriety. Like I could kind of comprehend this, you know, if my arrangements would only stay put, if people would only do as you wish. The reality is when I got sober, no one was talking to me. There was no one to arrange, right? There was none of that, right? And it took a while to get that, you know, and so it's taken me a while to be able to put some of these things into practice in my life. And I absolutely realize that, that I am incredibly a director, in my sober life. But when I was getting sober, you know, I will tell you, I was even trying to be the director when I was trying to get sober. Like by the grace of God, I was able to pay off the $15,000 worth of fines that I had when I got here to get my driver's license a couple years into sobriety. And I was trying to be the director of the DMB. It didn't go over very well. And I threw the biggest adult tantrum with this very kind person that was willing to take me to the DMV. And because I didn't get my driver's license, you know, the day, because I had checked all, you know, all of the boxes and, you know, done all of the things that the three people before told me that I needed to do. And I got there and there was like one box that wasn't checked. And I just, I had to go home. I had to get a ride to the courts and have something else signed. I don't know. And just come back the next day. And I got my driver's license, but I threw the biggest tantrum that like, I was so ashamed when I finally got my driver's license that because the same person gave me the ride back the next day, you know, that really, like when I think back at that time, like all I could see is my behavior. I suppose I needed that lesson, but I didn't know how to swallow any of this. But when I was like at step three, and I gotta tell you, I was scared to take step three. I had a lot of fight about these three pertinent ideas, had a lot of prejudices against God. But what I knew without a shadow of a doubt is that left to my own devices, I was going to drink every single time. And I was going to continue to drink. And so I had this like strange willingness. And for me, like when they asked the question, just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? I don't know where I conceived this idea, but the idea was placed in my head was just to surrender. And the, you know, in the big book, it says, we cease fighting anything or any, right? And for me, it was just, I'm so incredibly thankful for the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I became willing to take instructions or listen to ideas that weren't my own, they appeared. And they weren't novel ideas. Some of them were like, well, you have the day off, do your laundry. You know, they weren't, you know, that like, you know, do three kind things a day, like these little things that I just really got to a place to where I was willing to admit that I didn't know how to dig myself out of the mess I'd gotten myself in. I didn't know how to not drink. I didn't know how to do AA. And I most certainly didn't know how to clean up the mess I had made. I didn't know where to start. And I didn't have a whole plethora of people that wanted to spend time with me, but you guys were always happy to see me. And every time I came to a meeting or showed up somewhere where I said I was going to show up, I got more instruction, right? Like just little things through people talking about their experiences and staying connected with people. And so this for me was my first like interaction with turning my will over to the care of God as I understand him. Because for the first thing I started to do was just to raise my hands and start to take instructions and hear what I was being told to do.
All right. Thank you both. Next section, also on page 60 or from page 62, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own willpower. We had to have God's help.
Man. So yeah, I don't know how many times I thought that, like, by me taking life head on, that was the right route in every situation. That, like, okay, I'm either going to be bullheaded about it and everything's going to go my way, or I'm going to either completely ignore it or try to push it off until somebody forgets about it. And I would have never thought that as alcoholism, you know. I would never recognize that as attributes of alcoholism, but, you know, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. And I can't tell you how many potential friendships I could have had that just turned into acquaintances that didn't really want to be bothered with me later down the line. And that includes family members. Like, I remember my aunt and uncle came over from Hawaii, and I was messed up. And the plan was everybody's going to go to the Cherry Blossom Festival in DC. And here I am messed up, and I got to stay home. And I'm not talking about, like, I'm a teenager or anything. I'm like 21 at the time, right? And I just remember the look of my mom's face of, like, my brother came here from Hawaii to spend time with not just me, but with you. And here you are messed up. And it's like, that was my decision to do that. And so it continues on from what it said before of that selfishness, self-centeredness. You know, we put ourselves in positions to be hurt. And, like, again, I didn't think that without a drink, I would be doing this type of stuff. But then I find it's even worse that I put it in worse situations, that I continue because I've got nothing to handle this bottled anxiety. I'm going to continually, like, make these relationships and either people please to death or command people to death. And then it finally talks about the alcoholic, because it's still talking about normal people. Normal people put themselves in positions to be hurt. The problem is I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, and I have no level of self-reflection. I usually don't think so. No level. There's just no, like, not me. It looks sometimes like narcissism because I'm always the victim and the victim and the victim, right? And there was this speaker that not even an alcoholic, but he's is a therapist, and he's like, you know, I have my patients, and at some point in time, you know, they say something happens to them. And if we go far enough back somewhere, they try to twist reality into whatever fantasy they believed in. And it's like, ah, that's what happened. And that's what this reminds me of. And it goes into those moral and philosophical convictions. And the problem is that I instinctively bring those convictions into sobriety. I instinctively bring in, well, because I do this, you're supposed to do. And when this happens, you're supposed to have this happen. And so that manipulation is on this very subconscious level. And I don't know how to get out of it. And so, thank goodness, there's a process. And that first part of the process, as Casey explained, is surrender. I remember being on the phone with a sponsee, and he's like, God makes this possible. I could never imagine how to get rid of selfishness. And I'm like, yeah, that's the point. He's like, no, but how could selfishness ever leave? I'm like, you got it. That's right. It could never happen with just you. He's like, but how does God, you don't have to figure it out. It says God does it, right? It's like, yeah. Can you at least just buy into that just a little bit, that something bigger than you has gotten you this far, and it just might not leave you off here. It might, but it might not. Because I know for me, might saved my life because it gave me an out and it gave me the opportunity to just try anyway. That was my level of surrender when I came in as it relates to this step. And so it's like, you know what? God might be wrong, but I'm going to go with he might be right because I got so much evidence of how much I'm wrong. So anyway, that's what I got with this.
So so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. And I came here like, you think, you know, again, I just was so argumentative. But I'm so thankful for Alcoholics Anonymous, because, you know, I'm thinking of when I haven't been here forever. I've spent more time here than I have sobriety, but it, like, what these words mean to me today are completely different than what they meant when I first came in. And and I am incredibly selfish and self-centered, and everything should be my way, and I'm the best martyr ever, just so you know. And I love that I can read the words fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, so that I'm able to learn and grow inside myself and be able to identify and admit when these things are happening. And I love that the close relationships that I have in my life are also centered around Alcoholics Anonymous, because I have a great foundation of strong women that are looking for these same attributes in themselves and can gently and lovingly help me see them in myself too, to the place where I'm able to, like, willingly go when I'm really struggling and, you know, and I know I'm wrong and I don't know how I'm wrong or how to fix it or where to turn and tell my genuine truth and be loved and supported, despite how ugly of a parent I'm being, or a daughter I'm being, or an employee or employer that I'm being. And I'm so incredibly thankful that this book lays out at our feet, if we're willing to work at it, like, how we can grow and mature in our lives, in our families, in our workplaces, and with one another, by continuing to one, rely on this higher power and this foundation that we're setting, and continuing to show up for one another. But, you know, in the beginning, like, it did stick out to me, selfishness and self-centeredness, because I had done some incredibly selfish things. You know, I lost my home, I lost my car. I lost custody of my children, you know, all for that next drink. And, you know, I was a terrible daughter and a terrible employee. I stole from people. I had a really long laundry list of things to make right that I never thought that I was going to be able to. And I didn't know at the time that I didn't have a choice. I really genuinely believe that I thought I was in control of my drinking and my drug use, and that I was just a big piece of you know what, for putting all of these people and things ahead of my drug use. But the truth is, I have a disease, and I was never going to not be able to drink if I didn't take some action. And so, but, you know, I really love that it says, neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by much. I was like, so I can do it some, right? Without God's help. So I ran on some for a while. And it took me a long time to grow into the idea of like, the best I could give for my higher power was being willing to take suggestions from this program, being willing to show up and do 90 meetings in 90 days and tell the truth when I really missed one. Because I did 90 meetings in 90 days for like a year, because my sponsor was serious about me doing 90 meetings in 90 days, and it wasn't okay to miss Wednesday and do two on Saturday. And I tried that numerous times. And for some reason I kept telling the truth, which is beyond me. I wasn't telling too many truths, but I kept telling the truth about that. But when I finally completed 90 meetings in 90 days, I actually did 90 meetings in 90 days. It took me 1 year to do it. And it was these little things, and that doesn't seem like a big thing, but it's a huge thing, because I was telling the truth and I was doing what I was supposed to do. And I was a huge victim, just so you know, because I worked a lot. And usually when I didn't miss it because I was watching Netflix. I missed it because of work, you know? And so I felt very justified that I was going to be able to do the two meetings on Saturday. Right. And no, that's not what that meant. And it's what I needed at the time. I have no idea. I don't even know if my sponsor does that with people today, but it is what I needed, and it worked out the way it was supposed to, for me. And so, so turning myself over, to, you know, the guidelines or the rules or the whatever it is, suggestions of this program, was the way that I started to let a higher power work in my life. And it along the lines of what Kyle was saying, was that it was pretty obvious that my way wasn't getting me anywhere. You know, I didn't need a ton of convincing that trying another way might be useful. So, but I can remember in early sobriety, I had my daughter was an older teenager, and the very if there's any mothers in the room have any idea what that feels like to completely crush your childhood. Your child's, you know, high school years, but because of your drinking, she had to leave her high school and go live somewhere else. And all I wanted to do was to make that relationship right and to be able to sort out those remaining years for her. And I was working very hard to do that. And my sponsor sternly, but lovingly pointed out to me that really what I was trying to do was make myself feel better. Right. Because if I could put her back and she didn't have to lose the high school, if I could just get her back at home and things could go back to how they were, I, in my mind, because I had decided this is what was going to make it right, would have fixed that problem. Mm-hmm. And I was bent on pushing the courts and my family for this to happen. And my sponsor just flat out said, basically, you're not doing that. You know, and I was so angry. I was living in like a sober house and I had to step outside. So I got an argument with my sponsor and convince her that my idea was better. But it was just like this little moment where I just was finally able to hear what she was saying to me. And that my best thinking, because my motives were right. That, you know, my intention for my daughter was good. I was completely incapable of seeing how utterly wrong I was for her at that time of her life. And what she really needed was just the stability that the home she was in could offer her. And what a pill to swallow for me. And like, and again, the women that have been placed in my life that are able to help me see these things. You know, and so it was these milestones that I came across where I began to see the way that I am operating, you know, and it was humbling. And I didn't petition the courts for custody. I did petition the courts for custody a month or two before she turned 18, because somewhere in my mind, it was the only thing I could do to make it right. But I did not push my family or her for her to come back home. And she finished her high school out at her aunt, and her uncle's. And it was incredibly painful, but I knew when I was able to see that my true motive there was making myself comfortable, you know, because of some idea that I had cooked up, and I was really able to admit that I wasn't what was best for her. I was incredibly thankful for my higher power working in my life. Well, you know, so I stuck around here long enough to have the opportunities to see these miracles and these changes in my life with these people that were able to help me navigate my way out of this gigantic hole that I had dug with my entire life. So that's what I got for that.
Thank you both. The next section, also on page 62, this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom.
Yeah, this is what a small little paragraph to change my entire life. The rest of the steps hinge on this paragraph, which is crazy. It's crazy. It's weird. And again, it wasn't until like 3 years in somebody like really explained how this third step works as a tool, as a function. I was like, oh, I've got to make a decision. I'm going to make a decision and turn my will in my life. And I would try with all my effort to turn it over. I got to take this circumstance and I got to turn it over. And I'm just going to try and turn it over. And I'm basically trying to do the second part without doing the first, which is surrendering. I had to quit playing God. And in the shortest version, as I see it, I had to disregard and completely put aside my opinion of how I think my life should go and the lives of others, and like just completely put aside. And it's frustrating. Like, it's frustrating to obviously see the obvious facts of the courts, the therapist, jail, you know, bad relationships. But when some of these things get mended and I start to feel good, I had to lose it all. I had to lose. I was close to 3 years sober, and I was homeless. Didn't have a home. The job I got fired from because I started taking my will back and my opinion of, you know, it was okay to show a few minutes late to a call center that starts on time and ends on time, right? And then being a recovery house manager, well, you know, I'm a recovery house manager, so I have to go to these meetings and hang out afterwards and go out to eat and stay out longer and whatever, and not be at the recovery house, which is the whole reason why I didn't have. Well, of course, they're like, well, we're going to find somebody else that's going to be able to help these alcoholics that really need your help. So I lost a place to live. I had my car, and about 6 months after that, I lost my car in a car accident. And I feel like it was God just icing on the cake, just like, you need it. You need it. Yeah, let's turn it over now. I had calamity. I had real calamity. And it was like, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Hereafter in the drama of life, and that related to me because I was a theater kid in high school. I was also the soccer kid, and I was also the, you know, Lil Jeter, and then Jeter number two, and I had all these different identities, and I had to fit in. God was going to be our director. I understood that. When the director wanted it one way, I was like, got you, we're going to do it. Cool. Does this work? I'd be on stage and I'd be like, hey, does this work? Does that work? And they're gonna be like, do it a little bit this way. And it reminds me of this line this old timer says. He's like, I don't know if God like is so invested in every little decision I make. I think he's more invested of whether I make those decisions with. And I'm like, okay, I can buy into that, right? But then it gets into the real true function of it. I need to recognize my disposition to my higher power. It's in the name. It is a higher power. And this is where, you know, I hear old timers talk about like, it's the God of my misunderstanding. There was at some point in time in my sobriety where I was like, man, God brought me this far. Today, I have a belief in my higher power that it's not just about God bringing me this far, but the things that I haven't even experienced yet, God has me. Now, do I buy it in that moment? Not necessarily. I'm human. I get emotional. I get frustrated. And I'm just like, I take my will back and I want to run the show and I want to arrange the lights. And if I'm able to catch myself, and this is why making phone calls, like y'all tricked me into sobriety. Hey, call some drunks and get some road dogs. They can be like, you sound crazy, right? You know, it just said it. Like, usually though, we don't think so. And so it set me back to this, oh, damn, I'm hurt, but like I needed to hear that. So now what else is there but this thing that has brought me through everything? And when I can recognize that disposition, it's not that my higher power is the concept. It's that when I recognize that disposition, that's the concept I need. I need to take a step back and be like, all right, you're bigger than me. You can handle this stuff. I'm actually going to take a step back and just be the spearhead. I'm not going to try and be anything else. I'm just going to go. And though I may be afraid going all the way through it, you're going to take me through it. And every single time, God reminds me, and this is another saying, this old timer said, fear is 1,000 miles high and 1,000 miles wide. And every time I think I have this huge thing, there's usually just something in front of me where God's like, no, just take that step. Just take that stuff. I haven't responded yet. Don't move, you know? And that's that keystone to finally make this archway. I got the pillars from the first step, the cornerstones of the second step. And then I finally got this trapezoid looking figure of the third step. And it's just recognizing this disposition of where my higher power is. And so surrender is very important. Because if I don't fully surrender, if I don't give up my opinion of how I think, you know, you should relate to me, I should relate to you, what you should do about it, how you should run your life, how I should run my life. And if everything's not in accordance, then everything's not right. If I can give that up, then shoot, I gotta, there's gotta be something else that's running the show. And if I can buy into that little mustard seed of a higher power at the time, all of a sudden it can help not just me, but every single person around. Anyway, that's what I got.
So first of all, we had to quit playing God. I was like, I never played God. What are you talking about? I love this chapter. The verbiage of it took me a really long time to hear it. Okay. I didn't do great with being the father's child, right? Like with my very religious upbringing. Being God's agent wasn't like on my number one like plan of what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. But I got the principle that I needed to remain surrendered. Right. And so for me, the way that I the way that I don't play God is by doing my 10th step, is by realizing when I'm upset and I'm at odds with a lot of people and things in my life that my priorities have gotten askew and that I am probably the problem. Right. And to get back to the basics, make meetings, talk to people, do some 10th step work, maybe do another 4-step. It's just like, wash, rinse, repeat, wash, rinse, repeat. This, all this like program is, it's just over and over and over the same things that you did when you first got here. And for me, like, that's how I end up not playing God. And I wasn't going to like learn to play God until later, just so you know, I have figured it out. I do it often. And it never goes well. I heard someone say one time that I rarely know what God's will for me is, but I'm pretty sure, what it's not, you know? And so, and I've had some pretty big catastrophes in my sobriety, and I picked up, multiple white chips but even now, I the furthest away from a drink that I've ever felt. And I'm sorry, my thought just completely escaped me. Look at that. I'm just acutely aware that in order for me to learn how to not play God in my life is just to remain surrendered. And continue to ask for help when I'm making a muck of things. But what's beautiful is that I've learned a lot of things by practicing being still, right? I'm a knee-jerk reaction solution kind of person, right? And there are so many lessons my life in my 40s turned a direction that I sure as heck didn't plan. Evidently, God was doing his job. I have this life that I didn't plan. Some of the lessons that I've learned in here, I live with my mother, my niece, and my grandmother now. And I have also lost some loved ones in my life over the last 7 years. And walking through these experiences with an idea of my idea might not be the best idea, even though hands down my ideas are great, just so you know. it really helped me be present in moments that I was not going to get back. Mm-hmm. One of them is my dad's and my stepmom's flower beds were like Jumanji. And it was my dad's like, I'm going to plant a huge garden and not do anything with it for a year. And the front of their house was just a mess. And my stepmom really cared what the front of her house was like. And she was sick. I was irritated with my dad because he starts these projects and he doesn't finish them, but it really bothered her. And so I decided that I was going to go over there and I was going to fix these flower beds. Two reasons. One, if I kept putting it off, it was going to be harder for me later. And second, she would like it. So I went there and she came outside and asked me if I would like some Diet Pepsi. And no, I would not. What I would like was to get this flower bed cleaned up, right? And so she comes out again and, would you like some Diet Pepsi? Pepsi, you know, no, you're like, no, I don't want any Diet Pepsi. I just really want to get this done. I have 2 hours. And so she comes out a third time. And this, I don't know what it was. I just looked at her and she was like, would you like a Diet Pepsi? And this thought crossed my mind that maybe I should just drink Diet Pepsi with her and not clean the flower bed. Mm. And I did that. And that was the last alone time that I spent with her. Mm. And I did not know that that was going to happen. And like, and I learned from that, and I'm not perfect at it, you know, but I'm really, really thankful for the times that my idea might not have been the best one, you know? And I'm just incredibly grateful for, also for times when I didn't, you know, stop, you know, and take my own eye to be able to look back and say, well, if I could go back, you know, I wouldn't do that, you know, and it, I think in a lot of ways is making me more present in the life that I have, now. I really wanted to be irritated with my niece tonight about some stuff, but instead I listened to my grandmother tell me about Putin, which was hilarious. All of my news comes from a 91-year-old, woman today. And it is hilarious. But you know, it is not of me to decide that it would be, probably be good for her if I spent 10 or 15 minutes a day sitting there and letting her tell me about everything the neighbor ordered from Amazon, because she has that completely down pat, and lies about, the dog grabbing food from her that she actually gave her. I'm thankful, just like being able to practice pause and learning how to not be in charge long enough to realize that, that while I have great ideas, they're not always the best ideas. Let me share.
Thank you, Beth. All right, this will be our last section. I'm going to combine the last two. On page 63, we were now at step 3. Many of us said to our maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Next, we launched out on a vigorous course of action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning.
You know, with this prayer, it's kind of like a battle cry. I mean, like, talk to my sponsor, he always has this line where he's like, you know, I don't wake up in the morning just happy-go-lucky and crazy. I usually wake up going, oh shit, right? And it's like, I'm not really instinctively, I'm not necessarily in the best position. I remember I had an ex-girlfriend that was like, you know, it takes about 5 thoughts before you get to a good one, but you usually don't have the patience to get there. And I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. And so with this, you know, this prayer, it sounds like it came from somewhere, which is really amusing as it relates to a prayer. But relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. I never thought that my self-will was bondage, but I never really understand it as bondage until I've had situations where I share it with other people and like I say it out loud. And with this prayer, this is like preemptive, like I can, you know, really offering myself to God, like all of it, that there's no mistake that it talks about, like, let's make sure that we're ready, that we can at last abandon ourselves to him before we take this step, you know? And it's like, with everything I can muster, can I abandon myself to something else? And if I've truly surrendered, again, it hinges on this surrender. If I've truly surrendered, hell yeah, I ain't got nothing. I came in this program not knowing what I wanted. I knew what I didn't want. I have not met a newcomer that has perfectly described what they want in sobriety, right? And so, like, I don't know what God has in store for me. I've never seen somebody predict the type of life they've had. All I've seen are straight miracles of living zombies, of people living life in the bonus round, right? Coming back from dead. And so this prayer, sets me up for this life that I do not know every single day. And that's hard to admit. Again, the longer I stay sober, it's harder to admit, because it's just like, man, life feels so great. Can't get no better, right? And it's like, you know what? Don't threaten God with a good time. And so when it says, take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, it's not how I think it would help. It's how God think it would help, right? And so I have no control of what that looks like. Sometimes that looks like stuff that seemingly is bad to me. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness. It's a battle cry for me, so that I can fully surrender and trust, start this process of a relationship of trust with this thing I do not know. All that I know is that it's brought me this. And that's powerful. May I do thy will always. How many times after this step does it say, do thy will, do thy will, do thy will? Let's go back. Remember, got to do thy will. Shoot. And again, every single step leads into the next one. If I fully abandon myself, if I've given this, if I've made this battle cry, next I launch into vigorous action with vigor. I've got to, you know, I don't know vigorous action that had waited till tomorrow. I don't know vigorous action that didn't make time in their schedule, you know? And so I have to remember that with these steps, that like, I'm fighting for my life. Am I? Today? I've got to act like it. And like, that's the reminder that this third step has, especially with this.
So when I took this step, and I've taken it numerous times, I also take it like every time I go back to the 12th step, I really, really mean this prayer. Because the bondage of myself is so incredibly powerful. Like, I will always be the dumbest girl in the room. I will always have a weight problem. Like, I will always have a resentment towards, you know, towards God. The grass will always be greener on the other side. Like, we are, you know, our own worst enemies, you know, and I have an incredible life that I really, really have to rely on my higher power to learn how to enjoy. Right. So blessed. And walking around with like this unknown anxiety about who knows what, like my problems are so quality. They really, really are. And I've had some pretty unquality problems, but my problems today are like not even problems in the grand scheme of things, but yet they are in between my two ears, you know? And it's one of the reasons why it's phenomenal that I have a group of people that I can say my crazy too out loud, you know, because it puts it a little bit more into perspective. And I'm able to surround myself with people who are, you know, realizing that they're not enjoying their life very much, or that we can enjoy our lives better, or we have things that we look forward to doing together. Like, who would have ever thought that one of my biggest problems was going to be enjoying a great life? you know, like, so, you know, I'm really thankful that something bigger than me is going to help me figure that one out. I really do want, it's like, it's not the car, it's not the job, it's not the repaired relationships that I believe, bear witness to what, a higher power can do in your life. And for a long time, I really thought it was those materialistic milestones, that were the ticket here, you know, because when I came in and I didn't have keys, I had no keys. Why do I need keys? I didn't have anything, you know, and everyone had keys, and it was very attractive to me, you know. But what I realized is a lot of people come through these doors with keys and they're completely empty on the inside. And I'm not completely empty on the inside today anymore. And I'm so incredibly thankful and I don't hate myself. I was so disgusted with who I am and who I was when I walked through these rooms. Like, I could physically feel the disgust inside my body. Like, I remember somebody gave me this this like task to look myself in the mirror every day and said, I love myself just the way I am, a perfect creation of God. And I did it, and I swear I must have done it for a couple of months before I could really squarely look myself in eye to eye in the mirror. And when I did, I just hated what I saw. I did. And I don't have that feeling anymore. And, you know, I don't wish to close the door on my past. And I know without a shadow of a doubt that the experiences that I've walked through, I'm incredibly thankful to be able to share those with other women who are walking through similar experiences. And I'm so incredibly thankful that when I got here, there were women that could talk to me about the experiences I was going through. And I never thought that losing custody of my daughter, that I would be grateful to have experience to be able to work with another woman that's going through something similar. Like, I never thought that I would be able to find a silver lining to that story. And I'm thankful to be able to still be here, to pass those stories along. And I'm thankful for the healing that comes through continuing to turn my will and my life over to the higher care of my higher power. Because left to my own devices, I would absolutely probably still hate myself. And I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be sitting here. So thank you all for letting me be here tonight.
Thank you both. All right, at this time, we'll pass the seven tradition basket. The seven tradition states each AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Hey, Ben. We're close to Williamsburg, 8:15. Instead of starting at 8, you get to 12, but it is also a lock-in, so day or night, we're going to do more games. We're going to show the movies. There's going to be a trail in the back of the house that we're doing it at. And possibly a fire pit. We got a lot of other stuff coming up with that, so going to war with that, come see me for that. And also, my home group, Downtown Young and Sober, we've been having a lot of people come for Williamsburg Street Smoke. We don't have the speakers anymore. They're done with, but we are having an anarchy meeting this week. Come see that and find out what the anarchy meeting is. Come check us out on Thursday night. That's it. Thanks,
man. Awesome. Thank you, Ben. Any other announcements?
My name is Kyle. I'm an alcoholic. The state of Virginia is bidding for the Southeastern Regional Conference of Young People in AA. That's all the 15 states from the top of Virginia all the way down to Texas. And so we're trying to bring this big conference here. We have a bunch of subcommittee meetings that are coming up. I know InReach, which is going within the state of Virginia and going to different meetings, is coming tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Wednesday. Feel free to join us because we have over 40 people across seven different cities all across Virginia that have joined this. And if you want to get involved with that type of service, please let me know and you can be a part of. But yeah, I also highly suggest go check out that pajama party because that Visky Parker is doing a lot. So thanks. Let me share.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. I have a quick announcement. I just did the math and 12.5% of the population in this room tonight is named Ben. Throwing it out there. All right. Thank you, David. There's three dudes named Ben in here tonight.
Nice.
The Bens are well represented here tonight. Rock, paper, scissors at the end of the meeting. Yes.
The Bens are jamming.
All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands.
Oh, that's strong.
And we have literature available over on the table. If it folds, it's free. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us, or if you're extra shy, email info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to follow, to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Stella's down Colonial Avenue. In closing, I'd like to ask everybody to thank Kyle and Casey for their sharing. Also, I'd like to thank Ethan and Rick for taking the seven tradition baskets around. And after we say close with the Lord's Prayer, we will, everybody will have a chance to say thank you one-on-one or as you please to our two panelists tonight. And I've asked
Ben.
You know, in a shot in the dark.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Tim.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in the morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks for letting me read.
Thank you, Tim.
Oh, and to mention, we have one more opening for a home group member.
Oh, just one? Okay.
We happen to have one.
Thank you.
Just saying. All right. Well, let's I'll close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer and circle up.
Only if your last name's Jenkins.
I regretted that the moment I
saw it.
No. Come on, we'll put you to work.
Yeah,
it's true.
Only if you're
not everybody to one side. Come on, y'all, let's
do this thing.
Right.
Oh yeah,
pretty
intense. That's
what I came
here. One venture.
Got a nice little
fight
to the death.
Nice little shiny beam. I'll be there. That would be on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and as we forgive those we lead us not into temptation, but thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.